Hi, everybody. Welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, back for the second day in a row to talk about some Ring of Honor wrestling specifically, this time to talk about their Best in the World pay-per-view from this past Sunday. I just got finally finished watching it, took a few notes, got everything else I needed to get done today done, and then it started to pour rain. We got a bit of a thunderstorm rolling through our area, it looks like, so I figured why not escape to the safety of the basement studio and take this opportunity to talk about my thoughts on the pay-per-view that I just finished watching a bit earlier today. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. Usually it's myself and my son. He did actually watch some of this pay-per-view, but he didn't think he needed to talk about it. He didn't really watch a ton. He watched the first hour and then a couple other matches along the way with me. But he does report with me on Saturdays for our flagship show where we talk about NXT, AEW, Dynamite, Impact Wrestling, some trivia, some wrestling figure news, some general wrestling news, etc. So if you haven't checked that out, feel free. We're coming up on our 1 year anniversary. This Saturday will be episode 52. So if you haven't checked that out, please do. If you'd like to contact either one of us, it's fnswrestling@gmail.com, fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram. Or if you happen to be listening on YouTube, you can just leave a comment there. I promise that I will get back to you as soon as possible. I respond to any feedback we get on any platform. So that being said, I don't really think I need to do much banter because there's quite a few matches that we need to discuss. So I say we roll right into this and let's talk about Ring of Honor Best in the World. So the first hour of this very lengthy show was available on YouTube. So Jack and I watched that one together. I noticed right off the bat, it didn't seem like there were a ton of fans, at least to start this free hour. I don't know, maybe it filled in a bit later, or maybe they were not quite having capacity. Maybe there was restrictions. It did look like people were sort of spaced out, but it was nice to see any fans at all, to be honest. So this is ROH's first time with fans in pretty much, I think it's around 18 months, right? So fans back, but not many, but nice to see fans of any kind. So the opening match on this, the free first hour, is Rey Oris versus Flamita, which I thought was a pretty strong choice. And this match was definitely a sprint of an opener. So this is two former friends. They were in a larger group together. Flamita's kind of turned heel, turned his back on the other two members of the group. So I think Flamita has won one match coming into this. So this was Oris's chance to kind of get even. So just a few things from each match. I'm not going to go over too much from the matches on this card, but more just talk about who won and what my thoughts were on it. But a few things we did see in this: a leaping DDT from the middle rope by Oris for a near fall. Flamita hit a nice sit-out powerbomb at one point. Flamita then had Oris up in a muscle buster, but then dropped him onto his own knees, followed by a super kick for a near fall that I thought looked pretty cool. So the finish came when Flamita set up for a powerbomb, but Rey Oris rolled him into a pin in what was just under a 10-minute match. So this, I thought, was really good, fast-paced match with a smart choice to start the free show. These guys have worked together a lot, are really comfortable working together, you can tell. I thought this was a pretty exciting opener with a pretty fair length to about 10 minutes, right? Exciting moves from both of them, a nice win for the babyface to get the crowd into things as well. And I think it puts this at a 1-1 series right now. I could be wrong, but I figured this was a nice way to get the crowd into it, also put the babyface over so the crowd's sort of happy right off the bat. We then get a video package. I won't talk too much about them. I'll just sort of tell you what it contained. Spotlighted the Rush Bandito match for the ROH World Championship. Some footage of LFI members, Rush Dragon Lee, Kenny King, and Bestia Del Ring sort of arriving to the building earlier. Then followed by a brief video package on the Tony Deppen versus Dragon Lee match that will happen later tonight for the Ring of Honor television title. And that's one I'm looking forward to. I'm a big Dragon Lee fan. Tony Deppen's been growing on me, so I was hoping that that would be a pretty fun match. So Kenny King comes out, and he's predicting that LFI will win gold, and he basically insulted the local football team because he started out saying it was great to see fans, or it's been so long. And as they started to cheer, he quickly had to turn it around and sort of get some heel heat back, so he insulted the local football team. Then there is a really long Matt Taven segment that I'm not going to get into too much. Basically, what ends up happening, Vincent interrupts, things escalate, and they end up settling on a cage match, which will be for Matt Taven's title opportunity. There was some talk of him leaving the company or something, but it sort of got backed up to just he's putting his title opportunity on the line. So I didn't think this needed to be on a four-hour pay-per-view as what this turns out to be if you include this first-hour show. And again, I'm a little biased. I'm not a big fan of Taven or this storyline, to be honest, so I didn't really need it here, but I guess it does further develop their story and puts sort of a match upcoming for them with some stakes to it. So from that point of view, I support it, but I don't think it needed to be on this show. The show was long enough without stuff like this being included, but there was nothing wrong with it, technically, I guess. Some more videos, recaps of the Flip Gordon EC3 issues, along with the Silas Young, Josh Woods, Quinn McKay then comes onto the stage, and she plugs a few various ROH projects online stuff, tells us that the women's championship bracket will be revealed tonight, which I'm sort of, I mean, great, but that's something else that's going to add some more time to the show, but that's okay. So I thought there's a lot of non-wrestling stuff jammed in this first hour. I guess they really just wanted to bring us two matches, and I shouldn't complain because much more interesting than a WWE main roster pre-show or an NXT pre-show, which doesn't even have a match on it. So at least the matches, there were two matches within the hour and they weren't bad. So let's move on to the second match of this hour, which is an interesting team of Danhausen and PCO versus the Bouncers, who are back together, Mike Malonis and the Beer City Brawler, I guess it would be. So I watch the product every week. I'm not quite sure how Danhausen and PCO got together, but it is an interesting sort of combination. You've got sort of the comically evil, I guess, Danhausen, and the sort of cyborg that sometimes malfunctions in PCO trying to work together, which is a kind of an interesting dynamic, I think. So Danhausen goes to chokeslam Bruiser at one point in this, and PCO sort of sneaks up from the other side and helps him. Danhausen didn't see PCO help, so he thinks that he did it all by himself, and obviously the Beer City Bruiser is a very big fellow, so Danhausen probably wouldn't be able to pick him up by himself, but he thinks he did, so that was kind of funny. PCO does do his standard malfunction spot, which sort of scares Danhausen. He doesn't quite know what to think of it either. And PCO ends up crushing Bruiser Brody, with a cannonball into the barricade as sort of Danhausen is getting out of the way of his own teammate at this point. So Sledge comes out, and I think they're telling us he's there to watch PCO. You've also got Ken Dixon at ringside, so there's a bunch of stuff going on here. At one point, we do get a Death Valley driver by Danhausen onto the teeth, and then PCO follows up with his moonsault for the win. This match was kind of all over the place, included a little bit of comedy and the surprising leaping spots by 53-year-old PCO at this point. I like the opener better than this, but I don't think that this was a bad match either. And a lot of people really do like Danhausen, and I must say I'm not a huge fan, but I get what he's doing and I think there's room for it. And there were a lot of people, I mean, there weren't a lot of people in the stands at all, but of those few people that were there, you did see some people in like Danhausen face paint, and clearly he has some support there. So I understand them getting the win as kind of like your comedy match in that opening hour. So the show officially starts, and the first match we're going to get is the Briscoe brothers, who have just finished a feud with each other and are now sort of being forced back to the bottom of the tag team division to work their way up. So they just beat a pair of Dojo members on this week's television episode, and now they're starting on this pay-per-view with Brian Johnson, who's one of my favorites, and PJ Black there teamed up. So as usual, Brian Johnson walks out with a microphone as soon as he gets on the stage. I'm like, does he have a mic? Does he have a mic? Yes, he has a mic, because his promos are some of my favorite in wrestling. So he does start talking as he heads to the ring, and it's really nice that Brian Johnson has an audience to play off of now, because this man is just, he just spits venom the entire time that he speaks. He's just always angry and furious and hates everybody, and it's much better act if he has somebody to play off of, so I'm really happy to see that the crowd is back. It's a really sudden partnership, I think, between Brian Johnson and PJ Black, because again, I'm watching the show and reviewing it each week, and I'm not quite clear where this partnership came from. Brian Johnson was on commentary as PJ Black had a match on the last episode, so I don't know if that was the beginning of it or if that was something happened on an online product I didn't see, but that's basically all I know about it. Anyways, at some point in this match, Jay accidentally hits Mark Briscoe, maybe sort of teasing, maybe things aren't okay between them, but it seems okay. Jay gets rolled up quickly for a two count there off of that miscommunication. Brian Johnson gets to do his Tower of London spot, I forget what he calls it, and then PJ Black hits a nice 450 right after that for a two count. Mark Briscoe hits a blockbuster to the floor that looked pretty good to PJ Black, We get an elbow drop off the apron by Mark Briscoe. It's kind of like the, oh my goodness, Mankind. Why can't I think of his real name right now? Cactus Jack, not his real name, but the name that would do that. Sort of elbow drop off the apron. And the finish comes when Jay Briscoe hits his J-Driller. Mark Briscoe follows up immediately with the froggy bow from the top. And the Briscoe brothers pick up the win in about 8 minutes. So this was a fast-paced match with what I thought was a pretty fun finishing sequence. A pretty solid choice for an opener. There was no downtime in this one. They didn't give them a lot of time, only 8 minutes. So these guys went pretty quickly. Personally, I would love to see Brian Johnson start racking up some wins because I think he's just that good on the microphone and that engaging when he is talking. But this is the outcome I expected. I didn't think there was any way that this journey back to the top was going to start with the Briscoes taking a loss this soon. So I thought overall this was a pretty fun opener, and I'm happy because Brian Johnson got to cut a promo, which is always a plus in my opinion. The next match we get on this card, not to spoil my thoughts, but it was, I think, the low point on the card for me. And this was EC3 versus Flip Gordon. So there, we do get a recap of sort of a weak story, in my opinion, between the two. Basically, they were tag team partners. EC3 picked up a pinfall win. He didn't know that Flip cheated, basically, to get the win. EC3 was distracted and didn't notice. So, of course, EC3's whole thing is honor, honor, honor for some reason, which he's never clearly explained to us. Drives me crazy because the man says a lot of words, but really doesn't tell us anything. So EC3 hasn't wrestled since then, and this apparently has been festering or whatever, and these guys just sort of need to face each other, so they do. Pretty basic stuff to start. Flip is definitely more ground-based wrestler since turning heel. He used to do a lot more high-flying stuff than this. I don't really have a preference either way. It's just sort of an observation. We do get a nice high knee and a standing moonsault combo by Flip Gordon. Gordon is sort of working on EC3's leg throughout this match. EC3 pulls off a superplex at one point. There's a nice butterfly facebuster, I think basically the fairy tale ending that Ciampa uses. And the purpose submission and applied by EC3, and Gordon taps out after about 13 minutes. After the match, EC3 tries to go for the code of honor, which is a handshake. Gordon slaps him twice, spits on EC3. EC3 does nothing and just lets Flip Gordon leave, which I thought was a little bit of an interesting choice there. The match was okay. To be honest, I found it kind of plodding at times. I'm not a huge fan of either of these guys. The feud leading up to this was also pretty weak, as I said, to begin. There were some cool moves for sure in this, but they came kind of in between stretches of just basic stuff and not very exciting things. EC3 didn't seem to be moving around particularly well to me, and he also was out of breath. Pretty early on in this. I don't know if that's worth noting, but I did. Decent match, but I don't think it needed to be on this card. This is a lot of matches on this card to get through. I don't feel this had the build to it, nor the execution, if I'm being honest. And a really interesting choice because Flip Gordon won, I believe it was a gauntlet match, so he has a championship title opportunity coming up, and he just lost clean to EC3. So that seems a bit odd to me, a guy that you've presented as the next challenger for the championship just lost clean to another wrestler in the company. So interesting choice. We'll see where they go from there. So next we get a six-man tag match. It's actually for the six-man tag team championships. So Shane Taylor Promotions, which is Shane Taylor, Moses, and Khan, who I am big fans of, are facing Dak Draper, Dalton Castle, and Eli Isom. So again, sort of a recurring theme for a few matches on this card. No real build for this match. So again, I review this show every week. I have seen very little about Draper, Castle, and Isom. But I do like Shane Taylor Promotions a lot. I do like Dalton Castle and Eli Isom. Dak Draper, I can sort of take him or leave him. So I'm okay with this. I think the idea is that during the Survival of the Fittest, Dalton Castle got involved and sort of scouted these two guys and has somehow convinced them. There's sort of like a tenuous alliance between them right now, it seems, during this match. So somehow they get a six-man tag team championship title, despite I don't think ever having worked together. So again, some storytelling, not the strongest in ROH at some points, but the in-ring product hopefully will make up for it. Castle makes his appearance. He's in a full jumpsuit tonight, and he's got four of his boys with him in their gold boxer shorts and white t-shirts, and wearing masks as well. So there's some entertainment there. O'Shea Edwards, who I still haven't seen wrestle because he wrestled on their online show, but he is there with Shane Taylor Promotions tonight as they make their entrance. This match, I had a lot of fun watching this. I really like Shane Taylor Promotions. Moses is the big man. He hit a really surprising senton from the apron to Isom and Castle that looked pretty good. Somewhere near the end, you get Isom going up top to execute a move, but Dalton Castle climbs up with him. I think he was saying they could do it together. I don't think he was necessarily trying to steal the spotlight, but he wanted to do something together. Isom, they're sort of bickering. Isom eventually shoves Castle from the ropes. Then there's sort of like a signature parade or a big move parade, as I would call it, near the end of this match. And then Shane Taylor hits his welcome to the land, like spinning Rikishi driver or Michinoku driver or whatever. It looks awesome every time he does it. And so he picks up the win, pins Dak Draper off of that after an 11-minute match. So this one kind of started out slowly, but it really picked up near the end. The two guys I don't know well in STP, sorry, Shane Taylor Promotions, of Moses and Khan, they just keep getting better to me. This little group is one of my favorite things in ROH right now. I don't think the result to this match was ever in doubt because, as I said, Dalton Castle's team was just kind of thrown together so that Shane Taylor Promotions had an opponent tonight. And with Isom shoving Castle off the ropes leading to the finish, Castle, that team seems like it already may be done. Maybe it was just for this show or they're going to spin off with Isom versus Castle coming out of this, which would be fine. So I enjoyed this match. I just wish there was some sort of story behind it to even add further to my enjoyment. Shane Taylor Promotions, man, honestly, they need to be on TV more. They need to be engaged in some sort of storyline. They're champions in this company after all, and they go weeks and weeks and weeks without being on television. They are a super cool group. I would be putting a larger focus on them. Taylor, I find also everything I've seen in Ring of Honor, his promo skills, his mic skills are really strong as well, but we haven't heard him speak really in forever. I guess that's part of the issue, right, of only having 1 hour of television each week. It's really hard to give a lot of talent attention, but again, these guys hold championships within your company. I feel like, and they're awesome, first of all, second of all, I guess. I think you just need to find a way to get them on your show at some point. It shouldn't be a month without me seeing these guys or hearing from these guys, even if it's getting some sort of pre-recorded vignette or something. Anyways, that's just how I feel. I really like this match. I really like Shane Taylor Promotions. I just want to see more of them, basically. We then get what is basically a grudge match, a last man standing match between Josh Woods and his former mentor, Silas Young. Now, I've been critical of Ring of Honor storytelling a little bit already in this podcast, but I have to say, this is one of the stories that I really, really have liked. And I'm not a huge Josh Woods fan. He is growing on me. But the dynamic between these two, it's basically the idea that Josh Woods is more talented than Silas Young. He's younger, he's stronger, he's faster, he's bigger, all of these things. But he refuses to embrace sort of all of the facets of professional wrestling. He's not looking to take shortcuts, even cheating, if you will. He's trying to just use his amateur background and his just physical dominance over people. So the point is, even though Silas Young is older and slower and all of these things, he has beaten Josh Woods because he is willing to sort of embrace all of the areas of professional wrestling. So this idea that Josh Woods needs to sort of get to this level where he's willing to do all of these other things. Because yes, you're an amazing amateur wrestler or MMA fighter or whatever, but there's certain aspects of the pro wrestling game that he needs to embrace. So he's sort of being forced to here in this last man standing match, as this is about as far from an amateur style or a pure style match as you can get. And Woods, to show us he's ready right away, attacks Silas Young on the ramp, runs him through a barricade. Woods, a little bit later on, gets driven through a table that had been set up in the corner. Woods pulls a bunch of chairs out from under the ring a little bit later, tosses them into the ring. Young slams a chair onto Woods' back, then hits a suplex. Silas Young hits, I think, what he calls his misery finisher onto a bunch of the chairs, but Josh Woods rolls to the floor, and as he sort of falls out of the ring, he ends up landing on his feet, which breaks the ref's count, which I thought was pretty cool. It's basically like he's almost out on his feet, but technically he's on his feet, so the count stops, which I thought was a nice touch. The finish came for this when Silas Young takes a German suplex off the apron through two tables, and Woods stands up just in time, and he wins the match in 14 minutes. Now, a German suplex off the apron through the tables is what I'm going to say. I watched it a couple times. I'm not entirely sure what the move was. It looks like it would have hurt both of them a great deal, which I guess was kind of the point. The idea was that neither of them could get up and that Josh Woods got up just at the last second to win the match. I thought this was a really good match. It didn't take too long, not a ton of time. Most of the matches on this show are under 15 minutes, which I think I'm okay with the more I think about it. Sometimes last man standing matches have too many like near 10 counts where we're just watching referees count that seemed to waste time. I didn't feel like this one did that. I figured Woods would win. It seemed like it was time for him to sort of finally beat his mentor. I did like him seeing him in a match, like I said, where grappling in his amateur style wrestling wasn't even really an option here. He had to embrace some weapons and tables and chairs and things if he was going to win this match. So I thought this was a good hard-hitting match that I assume is going to end this feud, and I think it probably should. And I think it has helped Josh Woods, at least for me, as he's just more of a complete professional wrestler now, I guess, and I just find him a little bit more interesting coming out of this feud. So another good match on this card. That's going to be a lot of times I'm going to be saying that, I feel like, tonight. Quinn McKay then talks to Matt Taven backstage after his attack at the hands of Vincent. He wants a cage match with Vincent. Sorry, going back to this previous segment. With Vincent after 2 years of this nonsense and Vincent just sort of harassing him and not letting him get anything done. So he says that Vincent will leave with scars that will last the rest of his life. He accepts the match at the next pay-per-view, I think, for his title shot. So that's what, sorry, I said earlier that that's what came out of it. It actually comes out of it here. But anyways, that's fine. I, not to be rude, I don't really care too much about this. Vincent has looked, sounded pretty good on the mic at times. In the ring, I think I've only seen him basically in a hardcore match that was a pre-recorded one, and I just thought it was okay. It wasn't anything great. So I don't have huge expectations, and I'm not super invested in that story. We then get the next match, which is Brody King, who I am a big fan of, and he's another guy I really hope they start to focus on a little bit, versus Jay Lethal. So Brody King made his entrance to one of his band's songs, and commentary starts talking about some of the mainstream things he's done. He's got an album that's doing well. I think he's got maybe one of the songs or something is on a popular TV show. Anyway, something like that. So Brody King, despite not looking like a mainstream dude, seems to be getting some mainstream attention, which is good for him. So right away, or right near the beginning of this, Lethal picks up a near fall as he hits a kind of a lethal injection out of nowhere, but King rolls to the outside, basically, and Lethal is surprised that he didn't get a three count off of this. So Lethal hits four consecutive suicide dives here, but Brody King is still standing, looking like a monster. King then takes control and basically dominates much of the remainder of this match. The odd little spot of shine for Lethal, but a lot of Brody King in this match. So at one point, Lethal does slip out of a superplex attempt. He gets under Brody King and hits a powerbomb. King, this was a really cool spot. You've got Jay Lethal sitting on one of the steel chairs on the floor right next to the barricade, and Brody King just hits him with a beautiful running cross body. It looked really good. They replayed it a couple times. It looked great. There's nowhere comfortable for Lethal to go. He's on a steel chair up against a barricade with, I'm guessing, a 300-pound man hitting a running cross body. So I thought that was a really cool spot. The finish for this I loved as well. Brody King basically hits two consecutive really nasty-looking gonzo bombs for a pretty dominating win after 11 minutes. So I was watching this with my son Jack, and I don't think he's seen a gonzo bomb too often because it's not something WWE is going to let people do. And these two gonzo bombs just looked vicious. So he was pretty much grabbing a giant, whatever he uses to wrestle, stuffed something, and was doing gonzo bombs on it because I don't think he'd seen it before. And they looked pretty awesome. It's hard to believe that Lethal isn't actually hurt after taking both of these. So honestly, I thought this match was awesome, partly because it didn't go where I thought it was going to. It looked to me like Brody King was dominating for so much of this. It led me to believe that Lethal was going to get his comeback and probably ultimately win here, and that it was going to be good enough that King dominated for a while. Instead, Brody King just continued to dominate, and he won after like what I consider a devastating finishing sequence. It was a little bit reminiscent of Brody Lee, rest in peace, his surprisingly dominant win over Cody Rhodes for the TNT title. That was even more of a squash, I think, but I love that match as well. I just like when wrestling can surprise me and a company's like, heck yes, we're just going to go all in and make this guy look super strong. Because Jay Lethal's a made man. He doesn't really need, this loss isn't really going to hurt him. And while King looks like beating a legend in a convincing fashion and just killing him at the end for a clean win does a ton for him, I think. So I love when wrestling sort of commits to something like this, and also it surprised me. I have to be honest, I pretty much love this match. So I don't know if everyone else feels this way. I'll be interested to see what the general consensus is, but I thought this was a fantastic match, and I would recommend going out and watching it. We then get, for the Ring of Honor Pure Championship, Jonathan Gresham versus Mike Bennett. The basic story coming into this is that Bennett won an opportunity at this championship. He respects Jonathan Gresham. Jonathan Gresham doesn't respect Mike Bennett because Mike Bennett's not considered, or what they would consider, a pure wrestler. He's more of a like a professional wrestler. So he's sort of in this pure division looking to earn respect from Jonathan Gresham, who is widely accepted as basically the best at this style of wrestling. So near the beginning, Gresham locks in a lengthy Kimura on the outside of the ring, and even Mike Bennett is trying to tap out here, but he can't at that point. So Bennett sold the effects of that arm, so the Kimura, for the rest of this match. Bennett ends up using two of his rope breaks fairly early and eventually uses his third, so all of his rope breaks are gone. Near the end of the match, Gresham catches Bennett in a crossface. Bennett reaches for the ropes, but he has no breaks left. Bennett eventually gets to his feet. Gresham puts him in a sleeper, but Bennett breaks it by running across the ring for a rolling senton into the corner, and then Bennett kind of quickly follows up with a nice clothesline, powerbomb, and a pile driver to pick up what, for me, was a surprisingly clean victory in the longest match on this card, I'll tell you now, at 19 minutes. So I guess the idea of this match was to show that Mike Bennett could hang with Gresham, and I guess he technically did. More than that, I guess he won clean. This match was given a lot of time. I was surprised by the outcome, but I do think this was a good match. I will note, I don't think the crowd was into this at all for some reason. I was sort of trying to pay attention. Not that it was a big crowd, but they were pretty silent for this. I thought this match was better than I expected coming into it because I didn't know how these two would mesh. It could have been a little bit shorter. I really don't think this needed to be the longest match on the card, but a better match than I thought it was going to be. I'm interested a little bit because Bennett is not exactly the type of wrestler that Ring of Honor has been touting for the pure division. So I'm interested to see where they go. And as a person, and I am, who has complained about there not being enough pro wrestling in the pure division, I was talking to my son about it. When this division started, I thought that this was exactly what I wanted, right? The most realistic portrayal of wrestling we could get. And then as I got that, I realized that's not what I want. I do need some professional wrestling stuff in there. It can't just be like, we're all serious contenders and we're going to have nice, clean, honest matches that look realistic. I thought that's what I wanted. Turns out once I got it, it's not. So I should be happy that somebody like Bennett, who's got the more professional wrestling background, is the champion. Maybe it's signaling sort of a change in the division, at least for a little while. I just wish it wasn't Mike Bennett that they chose to represent that, because he's not my favorite guy right now. Although I think he did a really good job in this match and it kind of over-delivered for me. We then get a backstage segment with Tracy Williams. We learned that we found out that was in the news a little while ago. He was hit by a car, so he's still unable to go in the tag match tonight. So the first replacement was supposed to be Jay Lethal, but now Jay Lethal is out after being destroyed by Brody King, and I love that touch, right? So not only did he get dominated and lose the match, but he's in no condition to wrestle another match tonight, which makes complete sense based on how that match finished. So Jonathan Gresham is going to have to step up and team with Rhett Titus to defend the tag titles. So Gresham, fresh off a loss of his pure division championship, is now going to defend the tag team championships as well. This takes us to a match I was looking forward to. Dragon Lee, possibly my favorite in ROH, one of them. I don't know, big fan of Dragon Lee and Bandido and Roosh and a few others, but versus Tony Deppen for the TV title. So Dragon Lee had a lengthy reign with the TV title. He got injured. Tony Deppen won the title sort of in the meantime. And this is Dragon Lee now back healthy on TV, ready to go. So this match starts out really fast and pretty much stays that way throughout. We get a suicide dive into a destroyer at one point. And that is correct. Suicide dive by Deppen hits a destroyer on the way out. Looked incredible. We get a double stomp to Deppen. He's sort of in the Tree of Woe, but instead of hanging inside the ring, he's hanging outside the ring. So he takes the double stomp from the top ropes from Dragon Lee and ends up kind of falling off the apron to the floor. Looked pretty cool. A little later, we get a suplex exchange, jumping knees and some more suplexes, a poison rana by Dragon Lee, a big clothesline by Deppen, and both men are down after a really fun sequence there. We get a dragon driver by Dragon Lee for two, which I think is basically the crunchy, or I forget, it has many names, but he calls it the dragon driver. Some sort of, I put suplex powerbomb thing, followed by the incinerator kick that looks pretty awesome. And Dragon Lee pins Tony Deppen to win the TV title for the second time in what was just over a 10-minute match. Dickinson and Homicide run out to check on Tony Deppen. And apparently, I don't know if they're just this was planned in advance or if this was just short for time, but that counts as their ring entrance, as the Foundation's music hits and the Foundation run to the ring and attack. So just before we transition to that match, I'll talk about the Lee and Deppen match. I thought both of these guys worked extremely hard, and I thought this was an excellent match. Some crazy spots, and then just lots of hard-hitting strikes and kicks and things, suplexes in between. Deppen looked better than I've ever seen him. Not that I thought he looked bad before, but he looked great here. Dragon Lee always impresses me every match I see him in. At this point in the show, this was my match of the night, along with the King and Lethal. I don't know which one I would say I liked better, but I really liked both of these matches, even though this was a short match. A lot of fun to watch. Highly recommend this one, especially if you don't know who Tony Deppen is, because I didn't until a couple months ago. So this was an excellent match. They weren't given a lot of time, but these guys accomplished a ton, I thought, in the time they were given. Another match I would highly recommend from this show. So as I said, the competitors for the next match sort of are already in the ring here, based off the end of the previous match. So it is the Foundation, as we said. It's Rhett Titus and Jonathan Gresham, sort of the third stringer, being called into action here for this match as the other two guys are injured, versus Violence Unlimited. And this is a match without honor for the tag team title. So that essentially just means a no DQ match. So that's going to be, Homicide and Chris Dickinson are representing Violence Unlimited here in this no DQ match. So again, we found out Lethal's not in and Gresham is. So there's chairs are introduced really early in this match since it is a DQ. Titus gets shoved off the top rope onto a chair. Titus puts Homicide through a table with a Michinoku driver on the outside, which looked really nice. Dickinson is then in the ring choking Gresham with a t-shirt, I think it was. Dickinson works over Gresham for a while in the ring, including a nice Death Valley driver. As Titus and Homicide are sort of out on the floor, we get an ace crusher off the top rope by Homicide to Titus. A cutter is countered into a power slam by Titus, who is immediately hit by a German suplex from Dickinson in a nice little sequence. Titus sort of hits a belly-belly to Homicide while holding a chair behind Homicide's back, which I thought was a pretty cool touch. We get an avalanche razor's edge by Dickinson to put Rhett Titus through a table, which looked pretty crazy as well. The finish comes with a 1-8-7 to Gresham, and Homicide picks up the pinfall, and we have new tag team champions in just under 12 minutes. So I thought this was another really good match, a good no DQ tag team match. For me, I thought Rhett Titus and Chris Dickinson really stood out. There were some crazy spots, weaponry, tables, chairs, lots of chaos, really fun tag match. Again, I'm happy to see the tag titles move away from the Foundation. And they have an excuse or a reason, right? They can point to the fact that Gresham had already wrestled a grueling match against Tony Deppen just earlier in the show. So they can sort of hang their loss on that. Another good match on this card, man. This thing's been delivering almost top to bottom so far. Interesting note is that Gresham has now lost two titles in a row on this show. And it feels like that's too significant a thing for them not to focus on in the future at some point. So I have a feeling that's going to go somewhere, that Gresham has lost two titles in one night. We then get Maria Kanellis and Lenny Leonard. I don't know if I'm supposed to know who Lenny Leonard is, but I don't. I apologize, Lenny Leonard. They reveal the bracket for the ROH Women's Title Tournament, also the championship itself, and the fact that the finals of that tournament will be at the Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view. So Maria then mentions how Vita Von Starr, due to her actions with the Righteous, I believe, has been removed from the tournament. She refused to follow some rules. She then announces that Chelsea Green has joined Ring of Honor. Chelsea comes out, talks about how she wants to prove that she's the best by winning the tournament. But she is not cleared to wrestle. I forget what state they're in, Maryland, I think it was. Yes, she's still in a cast, and Maryland won't clear her to wrestle, so she's going to watch every match and scout all the other women. She'll show the world what she can do once she's healthy. She tells Maria to start the clock. She doesn't need to wait 90 days. I guess that's at the no-compete sort of clause reference to WWE. The cast will come off in 1 month, and she will then take Ring of Honor to the forefront of women's wrestling. So I thought this was a fine segment, and I understand that they want to introduce Chelsea Green, who's somewhat of a major signing for them, I guess, on a pay-per-view like this where they have, in theory, the most attention. But again, this is a lengthy show. I would have preferred this waited for TV or something online even. It was nice to see Chelsea Green here. I don't know how good she is. I haven't really seen her much in the ring, to be honest. I wasn't watching Impact when she was there. She really didn't get a chance to do much in WWE. So I'm glad she's signed. I hope she does well, but I don't know if this needed to be on here to just sort of make this show even longer. But then we get the main event, so we're almost done. It is Bandido, one of my favorites in this company, facing Rouge, actually another one of my favorites, and this is for the Ring of Honor Championship. So Bandido won the Survival of the Fittest tournament to earn this title opportunity. Rouge has had the title for a very long time as part of LFI, just mega heels, cheating all the time, constantly, whether they need to or not. That's sort of what he does, and in every match, he's going to cheat a ton. Because I was explaining to my son as we were watching it, he's like, doesn't that kind of ruin the point that he just, but that's what his story is, that he doesn't need to cheat. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's an amazing wrestler. He's got all the talent in the world, but he can cheat. There's nothing they're going to do, because if he gets disqualified, he keeps the championship. So he constantly cheats whether he needs to or not. And for me, it works. I don't know if everybody feels the same way, but I find it's an instant storyline in every match he has, and it works for me. So he immediately, Rouge, hits the bull's horns, which is his finisher, to start the match. He then takes Bandido outside, runs him into the barricade, slams his arm in the gate. And then, as Rouge almost always does, he pulls out a cable from under the ring, whips Bandido with it, chokes him with it for a little bit. Again, the referee's there, and Rouge is just, he's going to keep doing it. Because if you DQ him, he keeps the title, and that's all he cares about. And he knows that even if the referee were to ask Bandido, do you want me to DQ him for choking you? Bandido will say no, because there goes his title shot. So Rouge kind of has them in a tough spot, and he just exploits it. And I think that that is a cool touch of his. We get a tornillo by Bandido, finally sort of stops the Rush onslaught. Top rope shooting star by Bandido for two. Some crazy athleticism by Bandido leads to a crucifix bomb for another two count. Rouge suplexes Bandido into the ropes to sort of stop Bandido at this point, as he was on a flurry there. Springboard leap by Bandido is caught by a Rouge dropkick and a diving senton to the floor. Rouge sets up a table on the floor and then another one right beside it. Bandido dives. Both go through the table, and I'm not sure what happened here either, but it did look pretty crazy. Snap German exchange. Pop-up cutter by Bandido. Both men are down briefly. We get an outside-in suplex by Rouge with ease. Just picks him up over the rope, suplexes him back in the ring, no problem. So, this is crazy every time I see it. I think it's an avalanche moonsault follow-away slam, I would say, by Bandido. Leading into the 21-plex by Bandido for a two-count. A really nice near-fall, because the 21-plex is his finisher. It's been fairly protected since I've been watching. And so that was a nice near-fall there. We then get a belly-to-belly overhead release by Rouge. He goes after Bandido's mask and sort of tears off like the top half of it. But Bandido catches Rouge in a pinfall as he's doing this and wins the ROH Championship in about 16 minutes. Although I will say, I don't know if they're going to work it into a story later, it did look like Rouge's shoulder was up. Like, there could be some debate over whether that was a legal pinfall or not. But for now, Bandido is your champion. LFI come down and attack. Leave Bandido lying in the ring. Nobody comes to help him, and the final images are basically your new champion. Rather than celebrating this massive victory on a pay-per-view, he's just beaten down in the ring with sort of LFI in there. So I wasn't a big fan of that being the final images of the show. But in general, I'll talk about that main event match. So for me, Rouge is great in his role of a vicious, relentless heel, right? He's going to take every shortcut because he knows a DQ is going to allow him to retain. He is so talented, yet he still cheats nonstop. And I think that's just a cool character in a professional wrestling show. Bandido spends the first part of the match as a victim of this, with all of the choking by the cord and being thrown into the barricades and everything else. It's a built-in story in every one of Rouge's matches, and it works for me at least. And then you've got Bandido, just a unique combination of speed, power, which I think is sometimes people don't understand how strong and powerful this guy is. High-flying ability as well. And being opposite Rouge makes him an even bigger babyface, because Rouge is just so despicable that he just bumps up the level of babyface on pretty much anybody that he faces, which is a very cool skill to have. I really like this match. Even though the finish was not what I would have ideally liked to see, both of these guys can do pretty much anything in the ring. I thought this was a really entertaining main event. Gave me the result I was hoping for, right? I wanted Bandido to win. I just really like him. Also, as I've been saying, Rouge just hasn't been present on the product for quite a while. And I don't think you need to have your belt on a guy that's not really there very often, it seems. So if it's me, I would continue building Brody King as a monster with a long sort of range plan of having him face Bandido somewhere down the line. That would be a matchup I would be really looking forward to. But I thought this was a pretty excellent main event. So overall, this was a really lengthy pay-per-view, especially if you watch the first hour. You're looking at about 4 hours of a show. For that reason, I thought some of the segments that were included on this show, the Taven stuff, the Chelsea Green stuff, didn't necessarily need to be on here, I don't think. It didn't add anything to the show for me. Maybe it did for some others, but it didn't add anything to the show for me. It didn't really take away from it either. Just sort of filled more time that I don't think needed to happen. Storyline-wise, I guess the big question coming out of this show is what's going to happen with the Foundation now, right? Gresham lost the Pure title. Gresham and Titus lost the tag titles. Lethal got destroyed by Brody King. Tracy Williams is injured. So to be honest, even though I thought it's what I wanted, I told you guys earlier, I haven't loved Ring of Honor with the Foundation being a really key feature and a stable that they focus on almost every show. So I'm fine if they make room for someone else near the top. My suggestion, strong suggestion, would be Shane Taylor Promotions need to be involved in a lot of stuff a lot more often. If you have the Foundation stepping back or moving on to something else, put some of that spotlight on STP, please. In ring, man, I thought this was a really strong show, almost top to bottom. Rey Oris and Flamita put on a fun sprint in the free first hour. The main show offered several strong matches, I thought. Dragon Lee and Tony Deppen was great. A brutal tag match that saw new champions emerge. Awesome Brody King Lethal match that was somewhat unexpected by me. And a thoroughly entertaining main event, despite the lackluster final images of the show with Bandido not getting a chance to celebrate, and getting attacked. I also like the Woods-Silas Young match, as it has been one of the better stories I think ROH has been telling. And finally settled that sort of feud in a brutal match, I think. EC3 and Flip Gordon was my low point of the show, but it wasn't even that was a really bad match. So if that's the low point on a show full of, I don't know how many matches it was, but lots of matches, that's a sign of a pretty strong show in ring, which I think this really was. If Ring of Honor even did a little bit better job of building feuds and telling stories before a show like this, this show would easily be in the A range, right? But too many times I found myself saying as I was talking about these, like the build to this wasn't that great, or there wasn't much a story before this, or they just kind of threw this team together, right? So the in-ring product, excellent, I thought. But some of the stuff leading up to it could be a little bit better, a little bit more detailed and polished. So I am going to give this show a very strong B+. And if you're just, you're not following the program or the product week by week, and you're just watching this out of context for the wrestling, it's probably better than that. I thought there were some really excellent matches on this, a really strong offering by ROH. So I'm hoping now, kind of excited to see next week's show to see where this shift goes, what's going on with the Foundation, if we can get sort of some changes in what the focus is right now, because clearly there were some title changes on this show, so maybe the product's moving in a slightly different direction. But all in all, I would say a great job by Ring of Honor. I'll be honest, I did not watch the show all in one sitting. I just had some things come up, so I kind of went back at it, and I still really enjoyed it without even the initial flow being there. So I thought this was a really strong show. Good job, Ring of Honor. And I guess that's going to bring me to the end of this episode of FNS Wrestling Podcast. Again, thanks a bunch if you took any of your time to sort of listen to me talk about this. I would love to hear feedback, especially from ROH fans, because I don't feel like a lot of people are covering this product. And I do notice there are some people listening to me talk about it. So if you'd like me to keep going, let me know. I've had a few people say, yes, we like the ROH podcast, which is great. I feel like I'm getting a little more comfortable doing these solo missions without any co-host, so I hope it's not too painful to listen to. I appreciate any support we get. Love to hear some feedback from any of you. You can look for maybe something special this week coming out. Jack and I want to try something for our 1 year anniversary of the podcast. But barring that, we will definitely be back Saturday with the main show talking about all kinds of wrestling on episode 52. And I hope that I will see you all there on Saturday, if not before. And until then, take care.